God began to create heaven and earth, the earth being unformed and void, with darkness over the surface of the deep, and a wind from God sweeping over the water. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Interesting. Bereshit, Genesis 1:26. And God said, "Let us make man in our own image, after our likeness." Interesting. And God created man in his own image, in the image of God. He created him, male and female. He created them. Wow. Nobody ever talks about them. What if, oh, they forgot about Lilith. Wow. Interesting. Well, that's going to be my subject today. As you know, this is Andrew Fetter coming from you live here in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I just tell it how it is because that's when pigs fly. Well, before I get on my main subject, which was going to be expounded upon, which I just was relating to when I was reading here. This is about Kabbalah. I first want to say in regards, apologize for that cut off. Apparently there's been a lot of storm activity in California where our base is, and apparently got cut off there. So I'll rehash where I was starting off. And dealing with Kabbalah, which, I like I said, is the receptor. It means to receive, and like say again, it's the phenomenon of the soul. Your human soul is the phenomenon part, which is the nekevah. And the zahar is the, which is the masculine energy, which is the universe and God in the universe outside. And when you bond together, that literally means you have like the sexual, when that oneness, you have good feeling, you're bonding with the universe. It's literally called the sexual climax of the soul, the spiritual climax, excuse me. And that infers that his bonded is oneness. Anyway, so there's that element, which I will get into again, like I said earlier, what its parts are, because I don't want to get too much theory, because I can do that all day on just different subjects. And because there's different also linings up of, concepts and theories and stuff like that. But to understand Kabbalah, I just wanted you to know, it is a recepting, it's a receiving, you're a receiver. And where Kabbalah was formed, those who are not familiar within Judaism or whatnot, and those who are even familiar with Judaism, really don't even know, a lot of people, most of them don't, because it has been kept pretty much of a secret, because basically Kabbalah is a mysticism. It's the underlining pin of what the foundations of what spiritualism within Judaism is, literally. And a lot of misinformation has been applied toward Kabbalah and things like that. So, and I studied from a religion sense. If people want to check my background, I studied in Israel and a renowned Moab, a holy man. I mean, you'd walk into his presence and your clothes would literally change colors. And I studied with him for 6 years, and a famous oracle, psychic, healer in her own right, Jenny St. Clair, studied under her and her husband, Elliot, who's a famous mystic. So I studied under them and continued my studies, and also learned a lot of my information through the what they call the Derech of the Markavah, which is the path of going out of body, which is another avenue, which I can go into deeply too, and I did on a previous thing about going out of body, but I didn't go about the Kabbalistical point of that way. So anyway, Kabbalah is the receiving. You're receiving things. That's it. You are the receiver. And it came foundation way back before, like during the time of Abraham. That's basically where they, people hypothesize where it originated. But where its sources, obviously, they look upon is from what they call the Torah, the first five books of Moses. And the reason why they say people, the religious, or people who are devoutly religious, and I'm talking religious in the sense of the mechanical basis, Orthodox Jews or very Hasid Jews, the Jews you see with a long pale, which are the curly little things going down, they're called Hasids. They literally will believe that the first five books were written by the hand of God. So in doing so, it's almost like it's a movement. You read things, people read things like things literally, like I just read to you, and they'll take that as a literal point of what certain things are. But there's an underlying thing underneath it. And when you read Hebrew and understand Hebrew, just like in any language, when you translate it, it can mean that the translator has just put his own interpretation of that word. Even though there are certain words that literally mean certain things, there's an implication of certain words that mean certain things. And then within the Torah itself, within the first five books in Hebrew, there are also other significance situations beyond that. So there's like layers upon layers upon layers. So that's one element. That's one of the foundations of a lot of things within the Kabbalistical tones are. And then there's, of course, the letters have values, which are numerology, which I'm going to get into. They have values. Each letter has a value to it. So they have a reason. Why are there's five books? Why are there, certain amount of names? Why there's certain reasons why those things are. And there definitely are reasons why, because every number has a vortex of energy. But the very element of to understand the true essence, the very essence of Kabbalistical mysticism and within, is to understand that, and it's very similar, by the way, in certain other religious factors. In fact, it's almost identical to Taoism, but I don't want to get into a comparative thing right now. Is understanding that everything is infinite and beyond the infinite, meaning that our universe is infinitely bound. I mean, there's no space when you see things physically. On the physical matter, it's infinite even. On the spiritual side, it is infinite. Even though we talk of concepts, in reality, they are just gray concepts. Now, when I talk of a point, like a numerological points or vortexes, and you've probably heard of chakras, even though themselves, you go very to the very point of where their origin, it's like picking a point, and it keeps on going down, down, down to its infinite. Now, when you get to the infinite, in Hebrew, they call it B'li Sof, which literally means without end. And in Hebrew, when the very essence of God, which is the universe, is almost, they call it the Yud, which is a little, looks like a little, like basically a line. Very has a very symbolic thing point, besides being numerologically meaning, referencing 10. So there's a very infinite, you have to think beyond the infinite. And it's the reason why I'm getting into that, beyond the infinite, because it's a very important element in practical Kabbalah and understanding meditation. So that you understand where you're trying to, what you're trying to accomplish and where you're going from. And I also pointed out in the very beginning when I read something from Bereshit, from Genesis, which talked from out of the void, came out of the void, became light, which is also to understand. That's how the references from Zohar, which is one of the major books of Kabbalah, refers to the very essences of the universe. Everything came out from a void, from beyond the infinite. So you have to think of those concepts. That is very much an important essence you have to understand. Everything comes from beyond the infinite, both spiritually and physically. And this is even proved with, out of T, I mean, mathematically, with whether it's through, you know, from any of the relative theories or especially the quantum physics, shows that everything is beyond the infinite. So that just justifies what everything is. Everything's beyond. So when you're thinking of that concept, that's where it is. That's one real important aspect of practicing Kabbalistical methods and your life is in a Kabbalistical form. The other situation, which is the other aspect I brought us, when God created man in his own image. Now, even though it's even more beyond that, because in Hebrew it's really, it says literally his reflection, his mirror. There's a reason in that. It's basically showing that God, or the universe, when he created, when man was created, his soul, his reference is he created the ability to create things. Man has the ability to create. He creates, but also he has the method of choice, which we find out later. So all these things, like I just said before, like even in the Bible, especially in the very beginning, because like Kabbalah deals with very the theoretical is almost like the Zohar talks mainly about, like, 60-70% of the first book, which is Bereshit, Genesis, in the Bible. That's where it relates to. It goes back and forth, back and forth. But that is the core, the basics. And you don't take things literally. Take things sort of from theoretical understanding, like when they talk of Adam and Eve, it's really not that there really was an Adam and Eve. It's talking the relationship of Adam and Eve toward their universe, you know, where they are. It's not that people take it literally, but it's not literally. It's to be understood as a concept, which people don't understand. That's the very foundations. And you know, that is the core of understanding in the Kabbalistic forms. You go through layers, and you know, understanding concepts. So when you read things, you look at the concepts, and you go through the layers of them, and they're constantly flowing. They literally say, like, the Torah, or the first five books, is like an organism. It's like constantly changing, even within its own system. In fact, look at today, people, I don't know if people have heard about biblical codes, they go through the codes, and what are Bible codes is basically they choose out these little things and they throw slides across different areas with names and stuff, and out pops the future events. Like they found in it saying that there was going to be the, you know, Twin Towers, and about Bin Laden, and about Hitler, and I mean, they all can be found in there, you know, and they are. And yet, there's what they call the duality of time. Things can change, but it's almost constantly changing, because it's almost like what the reference is being to being almost like a live situation. So that's, you have to understand those concepts. So you have a lot of different things that are happening. Yeah, first of all, I have to think the concept of things happen. Are things are beyond the infinite, and then you have to think of things not as in a layered effect. When you read things, especially biblically, don't read them on a literal level. Don't try to interpret from a literal level, especially if you're interpreting it, reading it from English point. Read it, and then you can go through beyond it. But you got to realize there's more concepts that go beyond what you're reading. It might just be a code, a reference to something else. In fact, it even goes beyond that. In fact, in Hebrew, they say there's when God created, in the Zohar, when it created the universe and created things, it's created with the utterance out of the tongue, which is another understanding that when you say things and when you chant things, that is also a point, a real important concept to understand. That's, you're creating a vibration. You're creating things out of that chant. Your tongue, by saying certain things, creates a vibration. It's very important. So literally, Torah, or the first five books of Moses, is the tongue of God. Literally the tongue. So, you know how you have those little buds on your tongue? You actually, if you look in Hebrew, you'll see, like, I don't know if people don't understand Hebrew, but they can see on top of these little letters, they might see little, like, little flicks up, that are going up, little, like, marks. Like, somebody took, like, it's an upside-down W, looks like a W, excuse me, and that's called a shin. And you'll see these little crowns on the letters. And those are very important because they have numerological points on them. And people don't even realize that they mean something else. And you can keep on going on and on. So there's a lot of references and things I can keep on expounding upon of what Kabbalah is in theory. You know, like Sefirot and the lining of Binya and the Chokhmah, which is the, you know, like the understanding and the wisdom, being on the masculine, and Vina, which is the understanding, the feminine, spiritual side of things. So there's that concept. And I mean, you can go through all that stuff and read about it, but that's not what I'm trying to elaborate or get into. I want to get into what's called practical Kabbalah. So the first substance, which I'm going to get into, is of meditating. When you meditate in Kabbalah, it is they utilize they call chants, utterances, and in fact, I have one that, in fact, I use it, and it's really commonly used. It's a practice that was developed by a famous Kabbalistical rabbi named Avraham Abu Lafia. And you can find, there's a book called Meditation in Kabbalah, written by R.A. Kaplan. And he has a lot of information, actually. He talks about the R.A. and all that stuff. There's all kinds of meditations in there, and points and fingers. It's a really great book, by the way, if you want to. It has a really good basics for Kabbalah and all that stuff. But you do utterances, and like there's a scene where you do utilizing one of the utterances, what I use is utilizing God's name, one of God's names, which is everybody's familiar with the Yahweh Yud Hey Vav Hey, and that's called O Yo Vav Hey, and I'm not going to go through it. But if anybody out there, and I can send them PDF copies of this chant, it'll have it in English and in Hebrew, and it'll explain how to do it. And you ever want, you can email me back if you have questions about it. And By the way, again, my email is flyingpigs@artlover.com. So, and it goes into those utterances. Now, when you're doing these utterances, it's creating a chant, a vortex, an energy. Like I said, it's from your tongue. You're creating the utterance. And there's a methodology to it. You do it a numerical certain amount of times. It's creating a pattern. And utilizing God's name, you're mixing up because we really don't know one of his true vowels. Because if you didn't know his vowels, you'd be able to be like Baal Shem Tov with no other name, or Jesus, or Moses, or any of the people who did know God's name, and you utilize it to create actual physical events that change, like, dramatically. So, but it has, when you're doing the chant, you're hitting it. No matter where you are, you're hitting God's name somewhere. So I recommend when you do it, don't be medicated, like don't be high, drunk, or anything else. And also, and if you're not, don't feel like you're feeling ill. It's not good to really do it because you could try it. It'll actually heal you, but it could, you may not feel centered when you're doing it. I mean, depending where you are spiritually, let me put it that way, how grounded you are in the first place. Now, what it does, when you do this chant, you're going to get into, after you do it, you try to get into a concept where, here I go again, to the infinite space beyond the infinite. You get into your mind where all that, I don't know if you, everybody's heard of, get rid of all that chatter in you. You allow all that chatter out. But when you get all that chatter out, your mind should be in the place of non-thought and then beyond the non-thought. That is the void. That is beyond the infinite. And that's where the state is, where you're trying to get. And you get very centered when you're there. Once you're there, you're very, very centered. Now, once you're beyond that, what's called, you'll have information coming to you from the universe. That's the receiving end. That's the Kabbalah. That's what you're receiving. Whether you'll, stuff, your feelings about situations, things around you, your guys might be talking to you. Things will definitely open up, but that's, it's really simple. It's to get into that mind thought. But utilizing this chant also creates a healing and also gets you into that mind thought. And that's just one method of getting there. Some people actually utilize, I know that like the Kabbalah Center, they hand out and like Madonna and them, and there's places other, they hand out, like they utilize visually looking at letters, which is like a visual. Like in the Buddhists, do the same thing, is visually focusing on one thing. But the whole concept of that is basically getting into your mindset of the non-thought, the same inference. You're just using a mechanics. The only difference is when you're doing a chant, you're actually creating a vibration, which is really important because you're creating an utterance, and a good utterance at that. That's a very important element to understand. When you meditate. And then when you act upon things, and the other part of the Kabbalistical way is you realize thoughts are things, which I've always pointed out in the past shows, and we have my choices, you are constantly creating. That's why I said God created you in your own image. Even when you say, I'm not being apathetic and being non-creative, oh, I can't create. You just created that thought of not being able to create, but you just created that. When you say you can't do something, you just created that idea that you can't do something. It's not that you can't do it, you just created that thought. And thoughts are things. So when you're thinking, you're manifesting. And that's the other element, manifesting. Probably heard that. Creating is the same, they're synonymous. When I use the word creating, it's also manifesting. You're constantly manifesting. Every single time you're thinking of something, you're manifesting, you're creating something. Now, there's fuel behind that, and I've mentioned this in past shows. When you put a thought out there, it's a vibration, you're putting it out there, and this is out of creating in form of Kabbalistical approaches and practice, because you're constantly creating your universe that's within you. I mean, you have chosen those choices. Whether you believe it or not, this is the truth. You've created when you've come through your soul, you've chosen, and then physically in your consciousness when you create things, and unconsciously things are being created. Because they are always constantly creating. Our universe is constantly creating itself in front of us. And you got to likewise, people are also creating to counter-create. And so you can imagine those hitting, they're like almost like atoms hitting each other, like events. And that's where the cosmic forces take place. So when you think real negative about certain situations, guess what? You just manifested those things that constantly happen. When you haven't learned your lesson, you'll be thrown back that lesson. When you have somebody, you know, stalking you and you haven't learned to recoup and you have that same person, there's a reason behind it because your thoughts are still there. You haven't learned the lesson yet. Obviously, because your thoughts are still caught up on it. And then you can and it's teaching you not to create that same scenario. Or if you're thinking you're in a bad relationship, the same scenario. And when you recognize a bad relationship or a bad situation, you go, wait a second, I've been there before. Hey, you know, I don't want to do that again. Again, that manifestation that you recreated it. Now you recreated it. It's a learning event. And you can always create in the positive. You know, then when you hear people think positive, it really means it. Now, like I said, there's fuel behind the thought. Just saying, oh, I feel good today. Yeah, that does it. But there's three important elements that go behind that element. And this is also very important with living in a practical Kabbalistical way, is it's called web. Just remember, web. The easy way to remember that fuel behind the thought. Will, emotion, belief. And that's like the fuel behind the thought. If you will it, you have emotion behind it, and you believe it, those three elements together is the velocity behind your thoughts. And it's the velocity of how much it would be creating. And when you think of something, that's how you manifest. And that's how it's created. And that's how things are created. And through utterances, you hear people like prayer, and they pray over and over and over. And they're getting in that mind state, and they're praying and praying. That's the same thing. And they do that with utterances. And then in Hebrew, they use which I'm going to now get into is the numerological utterances, and there's reasons for these numbers for these certain things that happen. For example, shlosh, which is three. By the way, all numerology is foundation is from Kabbalah. There's if you split the world in half, you'll have the eastern, which is coming from the origin of, from the eastern side of the numerological events, counting within. In Asia, from China, from Taoism and back. And then you have from the Western civilization, the foundation, ironically, is from Kabbalah. That is the very core of where you find the Western civilization for numerology, period. In fact, that's why you'll see things counted, why there's 8 days of Hanukkah, why there's 7 days of Passover, but outside Israel, it's eight, why there's 7 days. You know, certain events have certain numbers for certain reasons. Every five books of Moses, a reason, five books. Why are there four mothers of who are the foundation of the people of Israel? Four mothers. All these numbers have vortexes, all have meanings behind them. Example three, real common. People hear, what's a three? Why is it said three times? Three is healing. In fact, famous utterance that you'll look it up yourself about Elijah performing a healing act. And what did he do? He uttered a utterance of three times. He uttered it three times. And then the person was healed. Three is healing. When you do something to heal somebody, you do it three times. If you do something to heal somebody, like I said, do it three times. That's healing. Other four texts of God's name, for example, which has a multitude of things. Remember I told you the God's one of his, the Yod, which represents 10. 10 literally means the wheel of fortunes, the wheel. It constantly spins. In fact, when it said that when God created the universe, actually created it in 32, which adds up to, by the way, a 5. That's how many utterances, and according to Zohar, God created the universe. To keep the life, though, going, like biological life, to continue manifesting itself over and over again, He did it with two hands, 5 and 5, and then 10 and 10. So he created it with 10 as a wheel of fortune, another 10. But when God put his hand and created the universe, actual universe, he put his two hands down, which means he put 5 and 5, again 10, creating the universe, each with equal measure. And that's why you hear the concept of when something was, for every action, there's a reaction. So when there's 5 on one end, there's going to be a -5 on the other end. When there's something real dark, somebody's doing something, there's a dark side, there's a light side too, and vice versa. That is the method of the universe. That's looking at things Kabbalistically. And that's, like I said, when you get into the foundations of learning the numbers, 26, for example, God's name, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, if you actually took those letters and put them up together, and you run them down, it looks like a man. It literally looks like a man in Hebrew. You put the Yud on top, it's like a little top. And if you run the Hey, it looks like two hands coming down. A Vav looks like a line, and then two legs again. And it looks like a man. And guess what that number adds up? 26, which is an 8. And 26 is God's name, which has a lot of certain concepts too. It's being infinite. That's what 8 is, beyond, it's representing the infinite. And you have 4, which is a foundation, like I mentioned before, has a foundation of karma. Whoever's a 4 has something, has karmic tones toward it. 5 is represented by its protection, also as a bridge. So things are a 5. 5 can be going from one place to another place. If you meet in a situation it's a 5, it means it's a bridge to a new situation. If somebody's a 5, he's acting as a bridge to do for people. Or it can also act as a protector. And I'm sure people have heard of the evil eye, and somebody sees the hamsa, or the hand, that's what that represents. So the numerologically, those have certain focuses. And like I said, they all have vortexes of energy. And I can go detailed and more, but again, please, if any of you have questions about certain subjects, because I can go, all day. In fact, hopefully one day I'll probably set up classes and do this. I'm living in Las Vegas, and hopefully we'll relocate to California. That's my aim within, hopefully within a year or two. And I'm thinking about possibly doing classes. I've been asked to do classes here, but I've had too much basically on my plate. But feel free to contact me, and I will answer any of your questions. Like I said, contact me at flyingpigs@artlover.com. That's my email address. I answer everybody's questions, but just give me time, and I'll get back to you. Also, I will definitely make, in fact, I'll send you PDF copies out of the book that I have showing you those utterances. And if you have questions about that and how to do that, there's actually head movements that go with it, and I can explain to you how to do that as well. And you can do that at your own time and your own pace, and how many, I can guide anybody who wishes to know how to do that. And then also, if they have questions about numerological stuff or any situations within Kabbalistical ways or what, I'd be happy to help them with, especially in the practical sense. In theoretical sense, I may redirect you to another area. I mean, I may go answer you. Because some of the theories and theoretical stuff is fine, but when you really get down to understanding the essence of Kabbalah, this is what it is. It's, it's 15 plus 80 divided by 15 equals 30. And somebody goes, what? And I says, that's it. That's exactly what it is. A lot of it, when I studied Zohar, because it's so complex and so full of many levels, after doing, it's basically a round robin. You're going round and round and round and round and round. And that's why people get caught in the round robin of studying the surface of Kabbalah, because they're thinking they're going around adding the same number over and over again, and they're back at the very beginning. And then it is what is really teaching them, learning how to focus. It's learning to get that to that point where they can finally get to either be very grounded, where you can, when you feel ungrounded, you can immediately get yourself into a grounding state, and to also learn how to focus and get to the non-thought, the void, the bliss self, the beyond infinite. So those are like the very, very core things to understand that. So when you go to read about Kabbalistical stuff, when you hear about situations of like the Bible code or the events, these are the real cores. These are the cores that you read about, like within Judaism, which people do mechanical things beyond that in Judaism, and even Christianity, the real Christians from the real Christians, I'm not talking Greco-Roman, the Orthodox Christian we have today, the original Christians of the agnostics who were Jews, who followed those concepts, who didn't believe, you know, Father, Son, the Holy, whatever, believing in an infinite God. That's why there's no way to believe a concept of God being a son of God is beyond not of Judaic origin or at all. Because they believe in infinity of God. This is when people take a finite God, make him he or she or an Allah or son of, that's when they're running the wrong direction. That's not really what's the very core of spirituality, whether it's in Judaism, Christianity, Islam, or any, or Buddhism or Taoism, you know. It's the real core. They all do the same thing. And like in Kabbalah, the very foundation is to get to the infinite, to the beyond. Because God, when someone uses the word even God in implication of it being finite, it's really not. It's beyond. It's beyond the infinite. You can't even put a concept. It's beyond the infinite. It's just really interesting because I placed that in my book, in my last book, by the way, with this man, he's a Spartan mercenary, and I make references to what he believed in, almost the same thing. So I related that, and that's, by the way, the heretic. But that's where the concepts come from. It's beyond the infinite. That's really important to understand that. I drill this over and over again because that is a really important aspect of understanding the Kabbalistical ways of looking at things. And also very, very important to understand creating. You are constantly creating things. Every moment, every space, every movement. You can create things with thoughts, with your mouth. When you say things, and you get really mad at somebody, and you say, "Oh, I wish you were dead." Da, 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 da. You just, what'd you just do? Well, by the way, that's where it says, "Thou shalt not say God's name in vain." That's what it was referring to. There's another thing taken out of context. If they read in Hebrew, what it says literally, it's like, "Don't say God's name in vain." Doesn't mean say, "God damn it." Okay, what it means is say, "I hope God." You die, da 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 da, and using God, okay? Or I hope, you know, or say something in vain, like that. That's what that meant. It was not so that you would not say something out of your own speech in vain, because it realized you were creating that out of your own speech, your own anger. When somebody yells, "Akbar America, death to America," that's saying God's name in vain, too. When they say death to the infidel, that's God breaking God's commandment. When they say all Jews and Christians or Christians or Jews or Buddhists go to hell or whatever, and they're saying some angry stuff behind it, that's saying God's name in vain. All right? So that was the whole point of that. And that's also there, even in the, you read in the, "Thou shalt not make any engraven image of God or put any of the God before him." Very important reason why not engraving. It's not just idolaters or idols, and because they wanted to get people away from thinking and understanding that God is not a finite thing. God is an infinite thing. God is beyond the infinite. When you have to change the way of looking at things, and you see that is the real reality, when you look at the universe, even now, today, in scientific terms of quantum physics, we see that it's one and the same. That it is really true. It is our reality, both spiritually and physically, are beyond the infinite. So we have to look at those concepts. So therefore, everything, since we use the reference of God, and in like Taoism they say Tao, but they're all the same. They're just using different words, whether it's Allah or Elohim. Or Buddhism, Zen, and Yin and Yang, they're all the same. They're all beyond the infinite. That's the whole idea. Because that's what the godliness. Now, like I said, when you've got to think those terms, you have to think those terms when you're meditating, that's what's happening. And also meditating in the Kabbalistical way of looking things. It's not like people think it's kumbaya, that I guess om and I'm centered. And, no, life is not centered. That's just to keep you grounded. You know, life is up and down. And now you can choose to live a merry-go-round, but just keep on that merry-go-round, you'll never get anywhere. You go back around and around the same thing. Work 9 to 5, come back, smoke your bong, hit your beer. That's the merry-go-round. That goes round and round, and you never get anywhere. But you've chosen it. You can get off that merry-go-round. You can try to do something a little bit different. If you have to work the 9 to 5, you can do something outside beyond that. Like not be apathetic about politically. Not apathetic spiritually. And you can do little things. You know, manage your time. I know time might seem finite, but it really isn't. I mean, you'd be surprised. My last show, in fact, I actually timed it. This tells you how weird timing is. I actually timed that show. I read it. I have it. That was the only show I ever did script. That was my last show. I'm never doing that again. I actually wrote the whole damn thing out. Then I practiced it, see how long it would take. Because I was doing off stature, I had written, and I put together, you know, stuff. And every time I did, God, I was barely squeezing an hour. I was going over. I go, dang, what the hell? And then here, when I did the show, I actually go, oops, well, I got 20 minutes left. It just shows that timing is not what you think it is. Timing is also not linear. It can change. What you think might be changing. I mean, you can go through patterns and change things. But I know I'm going different courses here, but I want to also get back to the numerological part of looking at things. You know, if you look out, everything is vortex of numerology and all that is a good concept to understand. And because you can look at, like, why are things applied mathematically? You can look, apply everything numerologically in every essence, and that's like math. I mean, Einstein applied it within physics. That's what physics. Why are they doing physics with math? Even music, math. Computers, math. Drawing, really is math. Even literature, art. Everything can take, you can put lines and shapes and things, but it's math. It's geometry. Everything is has some numerological points toward it. And same thing, letters, same thing, vortexes, same places where you are in space and time. So that's where the numerological things apply to it. And like I said, there's different approaches to different things, but they're all pretty much generally the same. And like I said, in the Kabbalistical fashion, very basis of things, they come from a standard where you look at things in a an essence where, like I said, they're like there's a 4, a 3, an 8, a 6 has certain reasons why certain things are doing that. If you look in the Bible, you can see certain things, why they say certain things and do certain things, why these holidays are 3 days in difference and such. There were reasons for that. Even when in Christianity, in early Christian, they picked certain days. It's not a or pick certain numbers. They took that numerological stuff from understanding what Jews had done, the early Jews, or the early Christians had utilized it, and applied it to their methodology of in placing it within Christianity. You know, and that's why you have the numerology. There are vortexes, you know, but those vortexes of numerology are points and beyond the infinite and beyond the thought. So if anybody has any questions, I mean, please do contact me. You can also contact me, by the way, at myspace.com/AndrewFetter. Also, if you heard that the opening song, that's, by the way, Denise Vasquez, that was Angel in Disguise, and you can get her stuff out at, you know, / Denise Vasquez on MySpace. That's from her Frame of Mind album, and she's coming up with a new one. But I just wanted to rehash the certain elements that I had said before, but go into more depth of meditation and what it takes. And I was thinking at first I was going to read the whole thing, you know, that one chant one time, and that's just, God, what are people going to sit? You guys don't really want to listen to that chant over and over off a tape. You know, rather just explain it, and then you can do it yourself, and, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory if you want to learn how to actually do it. And that's also a choice to do it. You can apply this, and you don't have to be Jewish to understand Kabbalah. You don't have to be, you know, Christian to understand any of the points what I referred to. It can be, it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with spirituality. And that's what the main thing, I think, the problem with organized religions, not to get into that part, they take things and make them more secretive, more mysterious when they really aren't. They're very pretty simple, and that's for their own idea, you know. And that's what I found. I mean, I was studying Kabbalah, like I said, back when I was in my 20s, and technically, you're not supposed to start learning until your 40s, but I was invited, and I don't know why, but they kept on saying, hey, you should learn. I remember when I first got married, I met a famous Rabbi Hamani, and he was a Yemenite Kabbalist in Jerusalem. And he, with my brother, my ex-brother-in-law, who was a Hasid rabbi, and they turned to me, and he said, he should be studying Kabbalah. And he goes, what? But he's so young. How can he? You know? And they would, like, freak out. How come? And then even, I ended up studying later on in the 80s, like I said, under the Moa. And later on, I lived in here, and I actually have tattoos, which you're not supposed to have tattoos in Judaism. And he'd see me, and he had tattoos. You know, I had tattoos. I didn't work yarmulke. You know, it looked totally non-religious. And there was all these religious people around him, you know, devout with long, curly things and praying, you know, black coats and all that stuff. And they see me walk up to him, and they're going, "You're, who is this guy?" And they look like, hey, you know, he has more than you got. You've got it. You didn't get it. You're sitting there because they're still stuck reading over and over in a prayer book thinking that's it. Maybe that's all they're supposed to be, you know, not to judge it. But that's not, there's more beyond that. It's not praying over and over and over doesn't make you spiritual. It doesn't. You know, if you're just doing it out of the mechanics. If you're praying and putting your heart into it, maybe that's your choice, and that's what you need to do, then do it. But the whole point really is to, is to get you into that mind state of non-thought. So I'm getting to my close, and hopefully I have some time, because I know we got cut off in the middle because of the storms are going crazy in California. But again, I want to wish everybody a very, very happy new year. Again, please do contact me. And I want to thank everybody for listening and future listeners, and I want to thank BBS Radio for having me on producing my show. Again, thank you, everybody. Thank you. And with that, God bless y'all. And I close, and you can listen to Devil Suitcase with from Masonic Temple, my friends from Down Under. Again, have a great one, and have a great 2008. Bye-bye.